The sun is a weight on my shoulders. It is 9 in the morning. The heat is already 84 degrees. By noon, it will be 96. The humidity in Georgia does not just sit on you, it crawls into your lungs. I pull the straps of the cooler bag tighter against my chest. My back is already damp. I can feel the ice melting against my spine. It is a slow, cold drip that reminds me why I am here. I am standing on the cracked sidewalk of an elementary school parking lot. The line starts at the double doors of the gymnasium. It snakes past the playground. It winds around the brick corner of the cafeteria. It ends at the edge of the street where the asphalt meets the dead grass. I count the heads. 142 people are waiting. Most of them are older than me. Most of them look like my grandmother. They are wearing Sunday best or work uniforms. They are holding folded umbrellas to block the sun. They are not moving. The line has not budged in 40 minutes. I know the rhythm of this precinct. It is 2026. They told us the new machines would make it faster. They told us the new maps were for efficiency. They lied. They closed 3 polling places in this zip code. Now, 10,000 people are funneled into this one gym. The machines are slow. The staff is thin. The air conditioning inside is broken. I know this because a woman just walked out after voting. She looked like she had been in a steam room. I adjust my hat. I am wearing a plain white t-shirt and jeans. No slogans, no buttons, no candidate names. That is the first rule. If I look like a campaigner, they have a reason to pull me out. I have to look like a ghost. I have to be the shadow that brings the water. I look toward the front of the line. 2 men in beige uniforms are standing by the door. They are sheriff's deputies. They are leaning against a patrol car. They are watching the 150-foot line. There is a strip of white tape on the pavement. It marks the boundary. Within 150 feet of the building, I am a criminal. Within 25 feet of any voter in line, I am a threat. That is what the law says now. It is called line relief. The state calls it illegal solicitation. They say a bottle of water is a bribe. They say a snack is an inducement. They say if I give a 70-year-old woman a drink of water in the Georgia heat, I am stealing an election. I look at the woman at the very end of the line. Her name is Mrs. Gable. I know her from the community center. She is 82 years old. She is leaning heavily on a wooden cane. Her hand is shaking. She is dabbing her forehead with a folded tissue. The tissue is shredded from the sweat. She has been standing here for 3 hours. She has 5 hours to go. I can see the gray cast to her skin. I can see her breathing in shallow, quick bursts. I check the perimeter. The deputies are talking to each other. They are laughing about something. I step off the curb. I walk toward Mrs. Gable. I do not look at her face yet. I look at her hands. I reach into my bag. The plastic of the water bottle crinkles. It sounds like a gunshot in the quiet morning. I stop. I wait. Nobody moves. I take 3 more steps. I am now within the zone. I am 5 feet away from her. I do not say a word. I do not ask who she is voting for. I do not mention a party. I simply hold the bottle out. It is covered in condensation. Beads of water run down the plastic. It is clear and cold. Mrs. Gable looks at me. Her eyes are clouded with cataracts and exhaustion. She looks at the bottle. She looks at the white tape on the ground. She knows the law as well as I do. We all watched the news. We all saw the arrest last November. She reaches out. Her fingers are cold. She takes the bottle. She doesn't say thank you. We are not allowed to talk. I nod once. She twists the cap. The sound of the seal breaking is sharp. She drinks. She closes her eyes as the water hits her throat. I see her shoulders drop 2 inches. I see the tension leave her jaw. It is just water. It is hydrogen and oxygen. But in this parking lot, it is a lifeline. It is the difference between staying and leaving. It is the difference between a vote and a collapse. I move down the line. I keep my head down. I find a young man in a warehouse uniform. He looks like he just finished a night shift. He is swaying on his feet. I hand him a bottle. He takes it with a nod. I find a mother holding a toddler. The child is crying. The mother is trying to hush him, but her voice is dry. I give her 2 bottles. She holds one to the back of the child's neck. The boy stops screaming. I am halfway through my bag. I am 80 feet from the door. I am deep inside the forbidden zone. I can feel the eyes of the deputies now. The laughter has stopped. I hear the crunch of gravel. I do not look up. I keep moving. I reach for another bottle. My hand finds only melted ice at the bottom of the bag. I have used the first pack. I need to go back to the van for more. I turn around. I see the beige uniforms. They are not leaning on the car anymore. They are walking toward me. They are walking fast. One of them has his hand on his belt, not his gun, but his handcuffs. He is a tall man. He has a red face and a silver mustache. He looks like he is personally offended by my presence. "Ma'am," he says. His voice is loud. it carries across the parking lot. The people in line turn their heads. The silence becomes heavy. You need to step back over the line. Right now, I stop. I hold the empty bag at my side. I do not run. Running makes it worse. I am just finishing, officer, I say. My voice is steady. I have practiced this. I have had the legal training. I know the script. You're soliciting, he says. He is 5 feet away now. I can smell the coffee on his breath. You're within the restricted zone. You're handing out items of value. It's water, I say. I gesture toward the line. It's 90 degrees. These people have been here since 6 in the morning. I don't care if it's liquid gold, he says. The law is the law. You've been warned before. We've seen you here all week. He is right. I have been at 4 different precincts in 4 days. I am a known factor. I am the woman who brings the water. I am the one they want to make an example of. He reaches for my arm. I pull back instinctively. That is a mistake. Don't resist, he says. His partner moves behind me. I'm not resisting, I say. I put my hands up. The empty cooler bag falls to the pavement. It makes a dull thud. I am leaving the zone. I am complying. Too late for that, the silver mustached man says. He grabs my wrist. He twists it behind my back. The pain is sharp. It radiates up to my shoulder. I gasp. I feel the cold steel of the cuff snap onto my left wrist, then the right. The line of voters starts to murmur. I hear a voice. It is Mrs. Gable. She didn't do nothing, she yells. Her voice is thin but sharp. She just gave me a drink. Stay in line, ma'am, the deputy shouts back. He doesn't look at her. He is looking at me. He is looking at the crowd. He wants them to see this. He wants them to know that help is a crime. He wants them to feel the weight of the sun and know that no one is coming to help them. He marches me toward the patrol car. My face is hot. It is not just the sun. It is the shame. Not my shame. I have done nothing wrong. It is the shame of the system. It is the shame of a state that fears a bottle of water. I look at the people in line. Some of them are looking away. They are scared. They are thinking about leaving. They are thinking that if a woman can get arrested for water, what will happen to them if they stay? But then I see the young man from the warehouse. He is holding his water bottle high. He takes a long, slow drink. He looks the deputy right in the eye. He doesn't move an inch out of his spot in line. Then the mother with the toddler does the same. She holds her bottle up like a trophy. The deputy pushes my head down. He shoves me into the back seat of the car. The vinyl is scorching. It burns the backs of my legs. The door slams. The sound is final. It is the sound of a cell door. I sit there in the dark. The windows are tinted. I can see out, but they cannot see in. I watch the line. I am sweating. My wrists are throbbing. I am going to be processed. I am going to have a mugshot. I am going to have a criminal record. I am a community organizer with a master's degree, and I am about to be a convict because of a 12-ounce bottle of Deer Park. The car starts, the engine rumbles under me, the air conditioning kicks on. It feels like a mockery. I am cold now, while the people I came to serve are burning. The deputy puts the car in gear. He starts to pull away. I look out the back window. I see the van. My team is there. They are standing by the open sliding door. They saw the arrest. They are not running. They are not hiding. I see Sarah. She is 22. She is a student. She is picking up 2 more cooler bags. She is putting the straps over her shoulders. She is looking at the white tape on the ground. She looks at the patrol car as we drive past. She doesn't wave. She doesn't cry. She just turns around. She walks straight toward the line. She crosses the white tape. She reaches into her bag. She pulls out a bottle. She hands it to a man in a straw hat. The deputy sees it in his rearview mirror. He swears. He hits the steering wheel with his palm. There's another one, he says to his partner. Keep driving, the partner says. We got this one. The transport unit can pick up the next one. We turn the corner. The school disappears. The line disappears. The heat of the parking lot stays with me. I am sitting in the back of a police car, headed to a jail cell. I have lost my morning. I might lose my job. I will certainly lose my clean record. I lean my head against the glass. It vibrates with the motion of the car. I think about Mrs. Gable. I think about the water hitting the back of her throat. I think about her standing in that line for 5 more hours. She will stay now. I know she will. She saw me go down. She saw Sarah step up. She knows that the water isn't just water. It is a signal. The signal is that we are still here. The signal is that the line cannot be broken by heat or by law. I close my eyes. I am tired. I am scared of what comes next. I am thinking about the bail money and the lawyers and the phone calls I have to make. I am thinking about my mother's face when she hears I'm in jail. But then I remember the sound of the bottle opening, that sharp plastic crack. It sounded like a victory. I breathe in the recycled air of the patrol car. I wait for the station. I wait for the booking. I wait for the next time I can get back to the line. They can take the water. They can take the bag. They can take me. But the line is still there. And as long as the line is there, I have work to do. The car slows down. I see the gray walls of the county jail. The gates are opening. The metal mesh is heavy and thick. This is the irreversible part. This is where the paperwork starts. This is where I become a statistic in a 2026 court filing. I sit up straight. I pull my shoulders back. I don't look like a victim. I don't feel like a criminal. I am a woman who gave a drink to the thirsty. If that is a crime, then I am guilty. I am more than guilty. I am proud. The car stops. The deputy opens the door. The heat hits me again, but this time, I am ready for it. I step out into the sun. I look at the sky. It is a bright, unforgiving blue. I think of Sarah. I think of the coolers. I hope the ice holds. I hope the water stays cold. I hope nobody leaves the line. I walk toward the door of the jail. I don't wait for him to push me. I walk on my own. I have already done the hardest part. The rest is just paperwork. The door closes behind me. The sound is a dull thud. It is the sound of a world trying to shut itself off. But I know what is happening back at the school. I know the water is still moving. I know the people are still standing. And I know that no matter how many of us they put in these rooms, they can't arrest the thirst for justice. I am in the system now. I am a freedom rider for a new age. The road is different. The tools are different. But the fight is exactly the same. I give the officer my name. I give him my date of birth. I give him my address. When he asks for my occupation, I hesitate for only a second. I provide relief, I say. He looks at me. He doesn't understand. He doesn't need to. The people in the 150-foot zone understand, and that is the only thing that matters. I look at the clock on the wall. It is 10:15. There are still 8 hours of voting left. I wonder how many bottles are left in the van. I hope it's enough. I hope it's enough to last until the sun goes down. I sit on the wooden bench and wait for my turn. I am thirsty now. My throat is dry. Ironic, but I don't ask for a drink. I don't want their water. I'll wait until I'm out. I'll wait until I can stand on the other side of the white tape again. The heat follows me inside. It lives in my skin. It is a reminder of the day. It is a reminder of the cost. I am paying it. I would pay it again tomorrow. The deputy pulls out a fingerprint pad. He takes my right hand. He presses my thumb into the black ink. He rolls it onto the card. The ink is dark and permanent. It won't wash off for days. Next finger, he says. I give him my hand. I look at the black stain on my skin. It looks like a mark of honor. It looks like a promise. I am here. I am counted. I am not moving. Just like the line. Just like the water. Just like the truth.